The following is a recording for Rebecca Chickie from the American Hospital Association on Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015 at 2 p.m. Central. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please note that participation on this call is by express written invitation from the AHA for AHA members only. Unauthorized participants and or any party that aids unauthorized participants may be subject to criminal and civil penalties under both state and federal law, including the Electronic Privacy Act. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode, and this call is also being recorded. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Rebecca Chickie. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, operator, very much. And hello and welcome to today's AHA conference call and discussion. The topic for today is the proposed rule on the inpatient psychiatric prospective payment system. As you have seen in the materials that were sent to you, the proposed rule affects freestanding inpatient psychiatric facilities as well as IPF distinct part units of acute care and critical access hospitals. And we are delighted that you have taken the time to join this call today to listen and learn from my two colleagues, two of my colleagues in AHA's policy division, and also, most importantly, to provide us with feedback on aspects of the proposed rule that you have questions or concerns about. At this time, I will turn it over to my colleague, Joanna Kim, who is the Vice President of Payment Policy, and then she will introduce her colleague, Evelyn Noll, later on in the presentation. But Joanna, take it away.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca, and welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. As Rebecca mentioned, we're here to talk about the inpatient psych PPS proposed rule. It was issued on April 24th, and as Rebecca also mentioned, it affects not only freestanding psychiatric facilities, but also psychiatric units in general acute care hospitals and critical access hospitals. Comments are due to CMS on this rule by June 23rd. The final rule will likely come out on July 31st, and then the changes will go into effect at the beginning of fiscal year 2016, which is, of course, this October 1st. We did issue a regulatory advisory describing the highlights of the proposed rule. That was linked to in the email that you received about this call. But the big provisions and proposals that we wanted to discuss today were the payment rate update for fiscal year 2016, a redesign of the market basket index used for psych facilities, some changes to the wage index, and then quality reporting proposals. So if you turn to slide 2, this describes the proposed payment update to the psych CPS for 2016. The market basket rate is 2.7%, but deducted from that is a mandatory productivity adjustment that was included in the Affordable Care Act, as well as an additional mandatory reduction that was included in the Affordable Care Act. Those are negative 0.6% and negative 0.2%. There's also a factor of negative 0.3% for outliers. This is not due to any policy changes around outliers. It's kind of an artifact around how outlier payments are made, it's actually a good thing. Each year, CMS sets aside 2% of inpatient psych payments to use as outlier payments, but it's estimating that for 2015, it will end up paying out 2.3% in outlier payments. So since it's paying out 2.3% in 2015, when it goes back to the expected 2% in 2016, that will sort of appear as a cut from year to year, but really it overpaid us hospitals, or is estimating to that it will overpay us hospitals in 2015. So that's not a bad thing, even though it appears in the year-to-year comparison as a cut. When you add all those together, we get a net update factor of 1.6% in 2016 compared to 2015. Now, if you turn to slide 3, there were some changes, as I alluded to, proposed to the market basket. So traditionally, IRFs, LTACs, and psych facilities had used what was called the RPL market basket. That stands for Rehab, Psych, and Long-Term Care Market Basket. For quite a while now, CMS has been exploring breaking up that market basket, and it has now proposed to create a psych-specific market basket for fiscal year 2016. Just incidentally, it actually implemented an LTAC-specific market basket in fiscal year 2013, and it has also proposed an IRF-specific market basket for fiscal year 2016. So the former RPL market basket would be fully broken up. The biggest change for this market basket is that it will include only inpatient psych facility data. It will include data from freestanding psych hospitals as well as hospital-based units, whereas the current market basket includes only freestanding IRFs, LTACs, and psych facilities. The CMS would also update the data that is used in the market basket from 2008 to 2012 data. They periodically do that kind of regardless of whether there's a larger market basket redesign, but that is part of the proposal. So if you turn to slide 4, this is a table from the proposed rule that compares the new proposed market basket with the old market basket, both historical values and forecast values. And as you can see, the projections are all very close, within a tenth of a percentage point or so from one another. Now, on slide 5, the market basket also feeds into what the labor-related share is that, of course, is used in the wage index calculation, because the market basket is used to calculate the proportion of costs that are related to labor, and that's what the labor share is. You can see on this slide that the proposed labor share of almost 75% is quite a bit higher than the 2015 final labor-related share of just over 69%. And this is mostly due, as I'm sure you all can attest, that inpatient psych facilities tend to have higher costs of wages, salaries, and benefits as a proportion of their total costs as compared to IRFs and LTACs. So when the psych facilities are broken out for their own market basket, that higher weighting of the wages, salaries, and benefits appears. And on slide 5 there, you can see is another table from the rule that shows the proportion each category of cost accounts for in the new proposed labor-related share versus the 2015 labor-related share. On slide 6, speaking of the wage index, in 2013, the Office of Management and Budget redid the labor markets that are used to for the wage index based on the updated 2010 census data. The new labor markets were implemented in the inpatient PPS in fiscal year 2015, and the IPF PPS lags 1 year behind on those wage index changes. So now CMS is proposing to implement the new labor markets in 2016 for the psych PPS. This can mean some big changes for certain people in their wage index and their labor markets. So CMS is also proposing some transition periods, and these are very similar to the transition periods that have been proposed and implemented for other payment systems. So specifically, all inpatient psych facilities in 2016 would receive a blended wage index, and that wage index would be 50% of your wage index in your current labor market and 50% of your wage index in your new labor market. If you are a rural psych facility that is going to be urban under the new labor markets, you would also have your rural add-on payment phased out over 3 years. So in 2016, you would receive two-thirds of the rural add-on payment. In 2017, you would receive one-third. And in 2018, it would be fully phased out. So with that, actually, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Evelyn Canoli, but at the end of our presentation, we're going to have ample time to take questions as well as comments on everything. So if you have questions or comments on these sections, certainly there will be plenty of time to ask those when we've completed the full presentation.
Great. Thank you, Joanna. In the rule, CMS did propose some changes to the IPF quality reporting program. We are definitely going to comment to CMS on some of these proposals. So as Joanna said, Please weigh in during the Q&A session with your comments, feedback for us that you think we ought to know as we're developing our comments. Also, you can send an email to either one of us. Our contact information is in the advisory that Rebecca sent with the invitation for this call. So currently, the IIPSQR program has 14 measures, and in the proposed rule, CMS would increase the measure set to 16 measures. Specifically, they would add 5 chart obstructive measures, and they would remove 3 measures. So let me review quickly one change for the fiscal year 2017 payment determination and onward. CMS proposes to remove HDIPS 4, which is patients discharged on multiple antipsychotic medications, because the measure is no longer endorsed by the National Quality Forum. However, CMS would require that providers still report HDIPS 5, patients discharged on multiple antipsychotic medications with appropriate justification, which CMS believes is sufficient. Originally, HDIPS 4 and 5 were supposed to be reported as a set, but the NQF discussions ultimately came to the conclusion that HDIPS 4 is not really a measure of patient care, and so the general thinking is that it's not as important in that set. So we have heard some, you know, a couple of folks who think they would rather keep HDIPS 4 because they do see a value. I will say we are generally not in favor of supporting measures that are not NQF endorsed, but if you feel strongly on this one, please let us know. Now looking to the fiscal year 2018 payment determination and onward on slide 8, I want to talk about some of the measures that CMS would add. And the first is a tobacco-related measure. And currently there are 2 tobacco-related measures in the program. The first is at TOB1, which is a tobacco use screening measure. And then second is tobacco use treatment provided or offered during the hospital stay. CMS would add a third tobacco-related measure, tobacco use treatment provided or offered at discharge, and it has a subset, tobacco use treatment at discharge. And this measure identifies patients 18 years old and over who have used tobacco products within 30 days of admission and who were referred to or refused evidence-based outpatient counseling and received or refused a prescription for FDA-approved cessation medication upon discharge. And then the subset identifies those patients who were referred to counseling and received a prescription upon discharge, as well as those who were referred to an outpatient counseling and had a reason for not receiving a prescription for medication. And CMS points out that TOB1 and TOB2 and its subset evaluate care during the hospital stay, while TOB3 examine care provided at discharge. And so they're trying to complement the current 2 measures. And they think the information provided by those measures will help consumers who use tobacco products choose among different facilities. The second measure that CMS proposes to add is an alcohol-related measure. The IIPSQR program currently includes sub 1, which is an alcohol use screening measure. But CMS believes that sub 1 by itself fails to capture an IPS response to this screening. So they're proposing to add sub 2, which is alcohol use brief intervention provided or offered, and its subset, alcohol use brief intervention. And that measure is reported as an overall rate, which includes all hospitalized patients 18 years of age and older to whom a brief intervention was provided or offered, or offered and refused, and a second rate, which includes only those patients who received a brief intervention, for those who screened positive for unhealthy alcohol use. So why is CMS adding this measure? They want to evaluate the IPS efforts to offer alcohol abuse treatment when patients screen positive for alcohol abuse, and they believe that these SUDs often go undiagnosed, which contributes to poor outcomes, and that it's a significant problem, and, you know, alcohol abuse contributes to liver disease and cardiovascular disease and so forth. Moving to the next measures that CMS would add to the program on slide 9, CMS would actually swap out 2 of the current care transition measures and replace them with new transition measures that the agency thinks are more comprehensive.
First, CMS would add NQF 0647, transition record with specified elements received by discharge patients, and remove HBIP 6, a similar measure for post-discharge continuing care. And HBIP 6 evaluates whether a care plan has been created for discharge patients, and it has four components that you see here on the right side of the slide. NQF 0647 evaluates whether patients receive a transition record at discharge that has, at a minimum, the 11 elements on the left side of the slide. And CMS states that the additional information provided to patients through NQF 0647 is important and could promote better outcomes and reduce readmissions. This is another measure that we would ask you to weigh in on if you could. We have initially heard feedback that the list of 11 components in 0647, not all of them are really relevant for patients in psychiatric settings, and the HBIP 6 elements, have been part, that measure has been part of the program since the quality reporting inception, and was really designed for the IPF setting. On slide 10, the second measure that CMS would swap out is HBIP 7, which evaluates whether the post-discharge continuing care plan was transmitted to the next level of care provider at discharge. And they would replace it with NQF 0648, and that evaluates whether the transition record was transmitted within 24 hours to the next facility or primary physician or other healthcare professional designated for follow-up care. Now, I will say that CMS believes that NQF 0648 is better than HBIP 7 because it requires the transmission of the data within 24 hours as opposed to the fifth day after discharge with HBIP 7. But we do have some concerns about swapping out these two measures, and we sent a letter to CMS before the proposed rule was released, saying that we thought CMS ought to continue with HBIP 6 and 7 rather than switching them out for a number of reasons. For example, we can't see where the proposed measures have been tested in the psychiatric setting. We think that the HBIP measures, if they're replaced, we would lose some important benchmarking data since, as I noted, the measures have been in the program since its inception. And if CMS finalizes the new measures, facilities reporting some facilities would be reporting the same information two different ways, one to CMS and the other to the Joint Commission. So we will probably echo those comments in our formal comments to CMS, but also let us know if you have thoughts about those. And finally, CMS proposes to adopt a screening measure for metabolic disorders developed by the agency, and that has not been in QF endorsed. The other four measures I talked about have been endorsed, though not all of them for the IPF setting. But this one has not been endorsed at all by NQF. So the screening for metabolic disorders measure is a chart objective measure, and it's defined as the percentage of discharges from an IPF for which a structured metabolic screening for four elements was completed in the past year. And you can see the four elements here. Our BMI, blood pressure, glucose, or HbA1c, and a lipid panel. And the screening would need to take place at least once in the 12 months prior to the patient's date of discharge and can be conducted either at the reporting facility or another facility for which records are available to the reporting facility. I will note there was a technical expert panel that looked at this measure recently, and they made some additional recommendations. For the measure, for example, they wanted to expand one of the inclusion criteria to include patient refusal. They wanted to clarify that the specifications relate to documentation, and they want the measure to better align with clinical practice guidelines. Namely, they want to specify a fasting glucose. So more to come. As we learn more about that measure, we will probably at this point, again, like I said, we are very reluctant to support measures that haven't been NQF endorsed, but if you think there's some merit to this, we would appreciate hearing from you. I also want to note for you that CMS is developing a 30-day psychiatric readmission measure that's similar to the readmission measures in the other quality reporting programs. So be on the lookout in future rules for a proposal along those lines. On slide 11, you will see a table of the proposed measure set for fiscal year 2018 and beyond if CMS adopts all of its proposals in this rule. That's what the program would look like in fiscal year 2018. And then on slide 12, we just wanted to review with you a few of the other changes CMS is proposing related to reporting requirements. CMS had previously finalized a policy for IPS to submit data for chart abstracted measures annually and aggregated by quarter, and that IPS must submit data for measures by age group as required by the Joint Commission. But CMS believes that that can be burdensome, and the reporting by age and quarter can result in numbers that are really small, and so they preclude public reporting. So beginning in fiscal year 2017, CMS proposes to remove the requirement to report by age group and require facilities to report data for chart abstracted measures on an aggregate basis by year instead of by quarter. And the table here that you have displays the proposed quality reporting and submission timelines for the fiscal year 2017 payment determination and subsequent years for most measures, but not for follow-up after hospitalization for mental illness or the influenza vaccine measure for healthcare personnel coverage, because the first one is a claims-based measure and the other is reported to CDC. In addition, CMS would also require that aggregate population count be reported as a single yearly number instead of by quarter, starting with the fiscal year 2017 program. And then finally, CMS would allow uniform sampling requirements for 10 of the measures. Sampling is allowed for some of the IPS2R measures, although those sampling requirements can vary among the measures. So CMS proposes the uniform sampling methodology, both for the measures that require sampling as well as certain other measures. And they would permit the Joint Commission CMS global inpatient population sampling that is found in Section 2.9 of the Inpatient Specification Manual. And in our advisory is a list, the chart that lists the measures for which CMS proposes to allow the sampling. All right, and with that, that concludes our slides. So I'll turn it back over to Rebecca to see if we have questions and comments.
Certainly. Evelyn, Joanna, thank you very much for that detailed explanation of the proposed rule. Operator, if you would provide the instructions to those on the phone as to how they can queue up with their questions and comments, please.